Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
Is this call in progress already?
So, Aaron, are you on this call? Hello?
I'm just a listener, but I'm not Aaron.
Okay.
Is this Rick?
Yeah, this is Rick.
Hey, this is Bernard.
Hey, Bernard!
Kim's coming too, so hold on.
Good.
Hey, Kim, got it. Yeah.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
Looks like you and I are the only people joining by computer, so nobody will be chatting questions to you.
Well, actually,
this is Cheryl, but I'm on my cell phone.
Okay. I was having trouble logging in because you got on before I did and they wouldn't accept my PIN.
Yeah, sorry about that. I had written to you to ask which one you wanted me to use.
It's okay. Well, if we're the only ones on the chat, it really doesn't make a lot of difference. I thought what we might do is just begin taking the questions that people had already posted and just talk about those, and this is the first one of these we've ever tried, so it should be kind of interesting. Who knows? We'll find out in a minute.
All right, well, fire away. I'm going to mute my mic because I'm in a cafe, but
okay.
Go ahead and start answering questions, Rick.
Good enough. Question number one. My husband's been acting out in our marriage. Whoa. Yeah, that's right. I'm trying to find times to make sure I'm doing them in order. We'll start at the bottom because I think those are the earlier ones. So first in gets their questions asked, answered. Make sure we get them all. Question. Something's happening to me. Not sure if they've abandoned the family to see if it's true love with the other woman. They've fallen in love and had an affair for 3 years. Unbeknownst to me, if they ever want to come back, do we have to take them back? Having the affair is one thing, but I'm not going to be his second choice if it doesn't work out with the other woman. I'm not sure if the person who asked that question, or by any chance, are you on the call, the person who asked that question? Speak up or for now, forever hold your peace. Okay.
Rick, she's not. I know who that was, and she shouldn't be on the call.
Okay. Absolutely not. And I wouldn't even recommend being second choice. Now, if someone recognizes that they've made a horrible mistake, that doesn't necessarily make someone second choice. And a lot of times when someone gets into a limerence and gets involved in an affair like this where they've actually abandoned the family for, quote, true love, eventually they wake up and figure out that it ain't true love. So at the same time, I think God has to give you special grace to accept someone back who's done that and That is abandonment. And I really believe there are, when it comes to divorce, there are three A's that are really, that at least I look at. There's abandonment, abuse, and adultery. And in some ways, this type of situation has at least two of the three and maybe all three of the three. So don't, you know, if you feel like you can't continue in that relationship, don't. I mean, God has to give you a special grace to be able to forgive in that sort of situation. And I wouldn't wait around. I would continue to live well and begin to move forward in your life. If at some point he comes back around and you've got your life back, you know, and you are interested and he can prove to you that there's a good reason, maybe you'll consider it, but I certainly wouldn't wait. I'd start moving on at this point. So does anybody have a comment? Because we've got a small enough crowd, I think we could actually take comments on that. Okie dokie. We're gonna. Yes. Who's this? Okay, I thought somebody was speaking up. Here's the second question: an uncooperative spouse. Hey, Rick. This question came via email. What can you do when your unfaithful spouse refuses to leave the affair? I'm actually gonna write an article on this one. That's a really complicated question. It's almost like the first one. In my mind, I usually recommend that you give somebody, you set a date. You don't even tell them the date. But if you feel compelled to give them a chance, if they're saying they want to try to leave the affair, you might give them a season, a month, 2 months, whatever. After that point in time, you make the decision. If you've got somebody who's uncooperative and doesn't want to leave the affair, then you move on. That person is pre-contemplative, and the last thing you want to do is, I think, be in a position where you appear needy. You don't even want to be needy. You don't need them. Have enough self-respect and enough self-love to say that's not okay. And then, you know, file. So who's going to speak up? Does somebody want to comment on that?
Hey, Rick, I think that's your mic echoing on you.
Yeah. Oh, my mic's echoing?
Something, yeah, I couldn't hear the last thing you said because of the echo.
Okay, let me call right back in and see if I can fix that, okay? I'll be right back. Aaron, or somebody else just ramble for a minute till I get back.
Well, Rick, I'll take care of that, don't worry. Did you guys have any questions about the website while you've got me on the phone? Anybody? Can you hear me even?
We can hear
you. Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, well.
So where are you getting coffee at, Aaron?
I am at Hastings. It's actually the cafe where I met my husband and where he proposed.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay,
so
guys.
I'm at Hastings in Norman, Oklahoma. And Rick is back, so I'll hand the mic back over to him.
Is it better now as the echoing stopped?
As of right now, it sounds
good,
yeah.
Okay, well, let me know if the echoing starts again, okay? I can try to control that. Let's see. On safety.
This is James.
Yeah,
right?
James.
Okay. I'm listening.
Okay. Oh, are you the one that wrote this question?
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you for being online with us. This will be interesting. My husband took it two and a half years until full disclosure. He told me about one affair, then 4 months later, another, then three, and then three more just 2 months ago. He's done a great deal to change, and I can see the changes, therapy, reading, and behavior changes. He says he didn't tell me about the last three because he couldn't bear to hurt me anymore. He's willing to take a polygraph and understands he hurt me more by not telling me all at once. Since we go on proven behavior over time, do you think this is safe? It creates a great deal of confusion for our recovery on my part. Why is honesty so hard for some men? Thank you for your help. You know, Jane, that's kind of a big question. I would say that sometimes honesty is also hard for women, depending on the woman, but there are several reasons that honesty gets to be difficult. One is shame. If you've got somebody that's really shame-based, sometimes there's almost a distorted belief system about exposing that it's not a good idea. In this situation, he's probably known that he needed to. And, you know, I wonder at one level, what's the precipitating event? Do you know what caused him to tell you just a couple of months ago about the last three?
Yes, the Holy Spirit was screaming to me, and I kept asking him because I said, I feel that there are more. And the Holy Spirit was screaming to him to tell me, and he just couldn't bear to hurt me anymore because he could see how much this had hurt me. But the last three, not that it's any minimal, but was like 2 one-night stands and an oral sex episode. So it wasn't like as big as his other ones that he had told me.
Yeah, the problem, Jane, gets to be, I mean, when someone goes in recovery, they need to be able to accept their dark side. I almost call it integrate the dark side and be able to accept who they are and what they are, and allow. They've got to move beyond shame, or they'll continue to lie. And hopefully, you know, if he's gotten everything out, then 2.5 years, he may set a record for the slow boat to China. But if he'll take the polygraph, then I would certainly say that it probably is safe, but because of the way he's done it, I would have him do a series of polygraphs for probably 3 years where he knows he's going to be taking, or 5 years, where he knows he's going to be taking a polygraph every year, and just tell him, you tell him I said this, that when somebody has that much trouble with revelation, that they're not safe. And the only way to create the safety now due to the way he did this is using the polygraph as an accountability tool, because the polygraph at that point becomes a tool to teach someone how to be honest. And he needs to learn to be honest.
Okay.
And he needs to be willing to take a polygraph. If you start feeling the Holy Spirit tap dancing, then he needs to be willing to take a polygraph then. And if he's not willing to do that on someone like this, I wouldn't say he's safe.
Okay.
So, does that help any?
Yes, it does. He said it just took him a while to get transparent, that he knew he had to get there. He just couldn't, and he has lied all his life. And, you know, he was almost there and was honest about everything else except these last three.
You know, it's interesting. I worked with somebody that flunked 6 polygraphs in a row, which I think is my record. And when he flunked the first one, Jane, he knew he was lying. When he flunked the second one, he was really indignant. But he had actually remembered something when he was going to the bathroom prior to the polygraph. And so he thought it wasn't fair because it's not that he had tried to withhold anything, but he still flunked the polygraph. When he flunked the third one, it was about a behavior that he thought, because this was a doctor who had been who had molested a bunch of patients. And the third behavior was actually about something other than molesting patients and that he hadn't reported, so he thought he didn't have to tell that. And he flunked polygraph after polygraph. And finally, when he passed, actually the sixth one he passed, I asked him, I said, how'd you pass? And he said, Well, I learned something. I said, he said, I learned you've got to be polygraph honest. He said, the reality is, I did molest probably 300 patients, but in reality, there were at least 3,000 that I wanted to molest, and I couldn't be honest about the other, you know, 2,700 patients. And he said, it was hard for him to accept ultimately kind of what the magnitude of the problem was that he had. But once he got there, what was interesting about him is I would be talking to him and he would report some very minor detail to me. And I would say, that may be a little over the top on reporting. And he'd say, oh, no. He said, I've got to be polygraph honest. And so one of the things the polygraph did for this guy is it really taught him how to be honest. So maybe that would help your husband.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Rick.
No problem. Marcy says, Rick, we were speaking during the men's group meeting last week. Oh, yeah. When we lost you, my cell phone died for everybody that's listening.
It's Matt, by the way, Rick.
Okay. It's Macy. Sorry, Marcy. I'll just call you Macy instead. How's that? That'd be better than Marcy. What followed after you left was a very good conversation about God, the church, and the role each of us has evolved to in our lives as these affairs unfold. In my case, the affair has brought me closer to God in search of a church and a pastor I feel can help and support me as I deal with my wife's continuing affair. My question to you is, how would the lay person go about determining the attributes to look for on a church, pastor, or a group where we can get support in recovery? Macy, great question. I can tell you the criteria that because I had the same dilemma after I went in recovery. Steph and I laughed. I think we visited every church in Denver, Colorado before we made a decision. It took us quite a while. To me, I wanted a church at one level that felt very alive. And I know that sounds funny and that's kind of an intangible, but I needed to feel like there was a genuineness. Having a church that already has recovery programs in it to me is a really good start because at least they recognize that people have problems. So a lot of times I'll look for a church that has that. Having a church that seems to be very authentic, where authenticity seems to be the norm, and that may take a while to figure out. But some of the churches that I speak at, I mean, we're pretty doggone authentic. They are, at least. And they'll talk about things like infidelity, and they'll talk about affairs, and they'll talk about masturbation, and they'll even talk about masturbation on Sunday morning. That's a fairly – maybe that's not appropriate. In some ways it is. But to me, finding something that already has a recovery group is good, and a pastor that would at least talk to you. And if you really want to check it out, talk to the pastor and let him know what your story is and see how he responds. That'll be a very good indicator.
Then I think I may have found one.
Good. Have you talked to the pastor yet about it?
Yeah, Tuesday. I had a real nice conversation.
Good. Yeah, that the only way I know to do it is to really talk and see what types of seminars, too, they put on. When I have a church inviting me to come up and really talk about serious men's issues and things like that, I know that they're serious about what they're doing, and they're trying. They're again, not pretending that it's about being good. They're really pretending that it's just a place where you learn maybe how to live well and how to walk with God through some really hard times. So I hope you found one. That'd be great.
Well, we'll check this one out.
Okay. Let me know how that goes, Macy, okay?
Sure.
Carolyn, are you on the call?
I am.
Okay. My husband and I are working on rebuilding our marriage after my discovery of his addiction to chat rooms and pornography. Since disclosure about 3 months ago, He's been managing his addiction, even though he's not aggressively pursuing help through therapy and has not joined an accountability group. I'm struggling because he's not getting help and also because he's acting so differently than he did before the disclosure. Now he seems immature and unable and unwilling to cope with life as an adult. I feel like I'm dealing with a teenager instead of the strong, confident husband that he was before the disclosures. What's going on, and how can I be a supportive, loving wife, even though I just want to tell him, grow up and get over yourself? Thank you for starting the Q&A sessions. Oh, boy. You know, Carol, are you familiar with the term dry drunk?
Yes, I am.
That's a little bit of what you're experiencing right now, and you may also be experiencing, because without talking with him, I'm not sure, but you may also be experiencing a thing called sexual anorexia.
What's that?
And you, okay, sexual anorexia, a lot of times when people stop acting out, they begin to act in. And so it's like they shut off. Rather than, it's like they don't know how to be a normal person. And so it's almost like they, to be safe, they shut themselves down to an extent. And they really don't even do relationship anymore. A lot of times there may be a great deal of shame. I mean, the fact that he's not willing to talk to somebody or he's not willing to do a group, to me, is typically an indicator that there's a lot of shame for him. And instead of kind of facing the issue, he's avoiding the issue, which is almost regressive in nature, which is why you're not seeing the strong, confident person, because the strong, confident person can't exist if he's not willing to kind of stand up and deal with the thing.
Okay.
You know, and he is being immature because of his fear. And once he quit acting out, his coping mechanism for dealing with life, his sedative for dealing with his own anxiety and his own fear and his own insecurity has been taken away. How is he doing at work?
As far as I know, he's okay, but he always
has. Okay. Is he approaching you at all, or is he in terms of just intimacy-wise, or is he kind of keeping his distance from you?
He is very willing to talk to me quite intimately if I start the conversation. I mean, he's not coming to me, but he's not rejecting me either.
Is it who all knows about what's happened with him?
Excuse me?
Who knows, Carolyn, in his life about what he's been going through?
Well, we went to an EMS weekend and that group, and
okay,
probably it.
That's about it.
About it. Yeah. And we are still in contact with them.
He probably also, though, needs to find a good men's group for himself. I wonder... since he's been to an EMS, do you think, Carolyn, he might be willing to talk to me?
Yes, I think so. We've talked to you before, and he'll probably, he's just been putting off making appointments, that kind of thing, using excuses not to, you know, not saying that he doesn't want to come back, but just allowing too many other things to get in the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Like work?
Like work, yes, especially work.
What I thought. Was he also seeing Wayne?
Yes, he was, and that's what he's really quit doing. He actually, we have an appointment with you, but it's not until July 1st.
Because I told Wayne to follow up with him.
Well,
so
I don't. Okay.
I'm going to also, Carolyn, talk to Wayne again.
Good.
Yeah, I can just tell you with him, he's also dealing with some really hard stuff.
Yes, oh, he is.
So he's avoiding. Well, if he comes in, if you'll come, you know, if y'all are coming in July 1st, then we can at least begin to, I can press in that direction a little bit.
Okay.
But I'll also press Wayne again and encourage Wayne to contact him again.
That would be great.
Because I said a while ago, yeah, fear is huge for him.
Okay.
And I'd like him to get beyond the fear.
So this immature act, the way that he's acting out this way is fairly common. I mean, this isn't an unusual reaction or...
Yeah, I think that the way he's acting right now may have as much to do with what's happening in some of his individual work as anything else, or the lack thereof.
That makes sense.
I'm sorry, what?
Yes. Yeah.
So, well, certainly we'll be praying on that one.
Thank you. And I very much appreciate you answering the question and doing this.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this. We've been wanting to do this forever. The problem has just been the website's been so wimpy until we got our problem fixed. We couldn't hardly communicate on it, so we're thrilled. Okay, here's a separation. My husband has been acting out in our marriage all of our 22 years, alcohol, multiple and emotional, he says, never involved sex affairs, phone sex, pornography, etc. In 2005, he lost his job over his conduct, second time it happened. I shut myself up in a dark hole, but continually cried out to the Lord and Savior to heal my hard heart. For reasons only God knows, he began to do a great work in my heart in late summer, early fall of 08, and into this year. I forgave my husband and started loving him again. We started attending a new church two times a week. I thought life was beginning to make sense again, although still with issues undealt with between my husband and myself. He's isolated himself from everyone and everything in our entire marriage. He's a selfish man with a sharp tongue that wounds for sure. I found out in late February this year, the day after his 47th birthday, that my husband was in what he calls another emotional affair. It's been going on for 4 to 6 months. At the same time, God was doing a work in me. This time, I told the children, his men's prayer group, our marriage group we've been in for 5 years, our pastor, and some of our closest friends. The other 21 years, I carried the cross for him with absolutely no disclosure, except to a Christian man who counseled my husband and got him to attend AA. As of last week, we're now 100 days out from being caught, and he's not moved out. His attitude has softened some since February, but it's a pretend normal. He hurts me daily with his words and actions, and as of June 6th, was still involved, although I don't know anything else. I am to the point where I just want God to move before I'm destroyed. I've asked him to go to EMS, and he says he's counseled out. I've never held him accountable. I want a separation, but I'm scared and unsure even how to implement this. My daughter says What if he never comes back? My son says, oh, well, no loss. Whoever wrote that question, are you online right now?
Yes, I am.
What's your first name?
Cheryl.
Hey, Cheryl.
I'm also a member of a Harboring Hope group right now.
Good. Have I ever met you, Cheryl?
No, you have not. I found out through a friend about this group, and right after the reveal, the group was starting, the Harboring Hope was starting up, so I believe that was a God thing. But I've just kind of been a very strong person for a very long time and just kind of dealt with it just on my own for 22 years.
Wow. What state do you live in?
Texas. In fact, I lived in Austin forever, and we live in Beaumont, and I've been trying to get him to go to EMS because we're real familiar with that entire area. I went to the University of Texas, actually, and our anniversary is actually the week, like a couple days before that, and I've asked him on several occasions, and he's still involved, although I think she's kind of put the skids on it, trying to get him to either move out or do something, although I'm speculating because he discloses nothing. Goes to church, prays with me, but yet is still actively walking in sin and blaming me and justifying his behavior. And he's, yeah.
Yeah. Do you work?
We don't have much of a relationship right now except living in the same house, tolerating each other. But although he does want sex twice a week, so go figure.
Do you work, Cheryl?
Yes, I do. I'm an attorney.
Okay.
We're both educated. We both have, you know, postgraduate degrees, and so, yeah.
And so your fear of moving out, is it the fact that if you were to separate with him that he would just go to the other woman?
No, it's more of my not wanting my children to have a legacy of divorce and knowing that he is a sex addict and has some real mental health issues. Although you would never know it unless you knew all of this because he's a big dog in his business and everybody thinks he's like the best catch in the world. And it's more of I'm afraid that he'll just never come back, actually. And don't ask me why, but that's just kind of I'm still praying and hopeful that he'll go to EMS, but I don't know.
And y'all have actually been in counseling?
We haven't been in counseling in about 2.5 to 3 years, I guess. I quit last time. I really wished he would just die. That was kind of the bitter place I was in my life. And I shut him out on the inside, although I, you know, lived and did everything I should have done at the home. He knew I had shut him out. And for some reason, God did a work in me. My pastor says it's because he wouldn't have anything right now to work with, because I would have let him walk. I don't know if that's true or not, but for some reason God softened a very hard, hard, hard heart. And then right after my heart was softened, I even did the love dare, went all the way through the love dare for him. Had nothing to do with this affair, but was already doing it. And then found out he's very super, you can tell when he's doing something he's not supposed to be doing because he's extra hard on me and has a very sharp tongue and is very caustic. My son, who's 15 years old, calls it nasty and negative. And I have a daughter who's in college also. And we've just kind of lived this isolated, he's a butthead kind of attitude. Everybody just kind of tiptoes around him. But he says that we control him, actually that I control him, and it's, anyway, don't ask me why, because I don't know. It's not a financial thing, it's not, I don't know. I believe when you know, you have a covenant and you make a covenant, I intended to keep it, although I know that I have scriptural grounds to get out. It's not really what I want. Never cheated on him. Never done anything like that. I think he wishes I had, because he wants to be have somebody in the same hole that he's in. And all he gets is agape, unconditional love. And but for about a week, I think I asked him about a week ago if he was committed to the marriage. He said he did not know. And I asked him if he was still involved, and he said, maybe. And I said, well, that's kind of yes or no. And so he said, well, I'm still talking to her, and I saw her about 2 weeks ago. And I said, well, will you go to EMS? And he said, I haven't decided. And I said, okay. And after that, I just kind of, he leaves for work at 7:30 in the morning. I don't see him until 7:30 in the evening. And I used to call him, make him his lunch, do things like that, and I just cut it off. And not because I have a hard heart like before, which is when I shut him out, but because I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. He still goes to church with me twice a week, still prays up every morning.
Yeah. He does what every morning?
Prays with me every morning. Yeah, but it's real superficial, you know, kids have a good day, you have a good day. Never prays for the marriage, although this morning he added he was asking God for forgiveness, but he's never asked me for forgiveness, and I don't ask questions because he always is able to turn it around and make it about him, and very narcissistic. And so I don't really say much anymore, and I'm just trying to decide what to do.
You know, there's a book that I think, Cheryl, might be worth your reading. It's called Divorce and Remarriage in the Church by David Einstein Brewer. And the thing I appreciate about that particular book, and I'm not a proponent of divorce.
Yeah, me neither.
but that book was really a very interesting read for me. Because it made me two things. First off, sometimes I think that people stay in marriages for the wrong reason, because they feel like they don't have a choice. And I would much rather have someone stay in a marriage because they feel like they could be divorced, but they choose not to be divorced. You know, that it's a legitimate option for them, but out of love they choose not to. Because when someone does the right thing for the wrong reason, I think it creates a lot of problems. I mean, eventually there's...
Well, I think I did that for years, but today I don't think that's where I am. What I really want to know is if I have a friend of his in his men's group said, I'll take him his clothes and you change the locks and force some accountability. And I said, okay, but if I do that, it's not going to be a bluff. It may be forever if I do that. I'm just scared to do it, but he's never been held accountable, and I just want to hold him accountable and let him know that this is not okay. And you know, yes, for 22 years you've gotten away with it, and you've managed to land on your feet every time, but this time for my peace, I need to let you go.
Right. And the second thing I was going to say, Cheryl, is that love always acts in the best interest of another person. And I believe, you know, in a situation like you're describing, it's not okay to act like that.
Act like what?
Well, the way he's acting. I mean...
I know. Yeah.
To continue down a path for him, because he's acting in a way that's amazingly unloving.
Right.
And that's even damaging to him. And so I usually ask the question, you know, is the way you're responding loving? Because I think that would be the first criteria to me, is always love. And if you do separate from him, the one thing I would say is, you know, there's nothing you're ever going to do to get me to quit loving you. This has nothing to do with my love for you. It's just that I love you enough that I'm not going to allow you to continue acting in such a self-destructive way. I love you too much to be a part of your own, you know, demise. I'm not going to be party to that. And you need to get help. And so I would at least couch your response to him from that perspective of love.
Of course, you know, you get that from his selfish behavior, and you'll get, yeah, right, that type of thing. You're doing just what you did to me before, that, you know. Because he throws it up at me all the time that I shut him out, which I did. I'm telling you, I really wish he would just gone away somewhere and died and given me a second chance.
Well, and when you're talking to a narcissist, Cheryl, and you already know this, you live with him, but, you know, it's like you always start off with, you know, I'd like to invite you to consider the possibility that. Because as long as you're not speaking in a critical way,
mm-hmm.
Then, and he doesn't feel attacked, at least he may stay open channel for a while.
Yeah.
The other path you can take is you can say to him, you know, I cannot do this anymore. I'm at the end. And if you can't help me, I need your help here. I don't know what I'm going to do. Now, sometimes with someone like him, if you'll take it from the perspective of you need his help, not that he needs help, but that you need his help, at that point, that card will sometimes get them to engage and do some things they haven't been willing to do before, such as an EMS, to say, if I can't heal, I don't know how I'm going to continue. And will you help me, please?
You think if I changed the locks and moved him out on, like, Monday, that he would never go to EMS knowing his narcissistic behavior?
I would try the asking him to help you first.
Well, I asked him that about EMS when I first brought it up because, you know, I'm familiar with some of the narcissistic methods, and I told him, and he said, well, if you need it so bad, you go. And my son's about to get in the car, so I can't give much input, although I can listen to you because I'm taking him to driver's ed. But
right. So I would say to that, if he said he'd think about it.
Yes, there hasn't been a definite no yet.
I would.
Although
I would,
that's kind of gamesmanship also, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, just tell him that I said, you know, you checked and it's something that you do as a couple.
Yeah, well, you know, I did mention that, but he said that, you know, y'all will say whatever, because I told him I had like a 90% success rate or something. And he said, well, they'll tell you, you know, it's counseling. They'll tell you whatever you want because to get your money.
tell him, and then say, you know, you're absolutely right. That's exactly how they are.
I did. That's what I did. That's exactly what I said.
Good.
I said it, I still think it would help, though.
I would love to meet him.
Well, you keep praying, and maybe June 25th you'll get your wish.
I will certainly pray. That would be a blessing.
Okay.
But short of that, yeah, the next step I would take is say, you know, I would do it exactly like you did it. I'd change the locks. I'd move him out. And have you read Love Must Be Tough?
No, but I just this morning, Dobson actually was talking about that book on American Family, and I wrote it down. And I had heard of it before, but I haven't purchased it.
Yeah, the one. I'm sorry, Cheryl.
Oh, that's okay. That was his recommendation, was accountability.
Right, and in his, one of the things he does in that book that's very good, and I don't think I can top or do better than what he did in that book, but he does a really good job of kind of talking about what type of letter you ultimately write someone like that when you really get to the place of separation. And, you know, that ultimately you need to be able to say to them, we care, but the bottom line is, you know, we need help. And if you can't do that, then we need to begin to, I've got to come up with something else. And he'll probably say, okay, because, I mean, that's how he's going to handle it.
Right.
So it's going to be difficult to get someone like that. I mean, if you can get them moving, a lot of times they'll make some progress, but you've got to get them moving first, and they're hard to get moving.
Yeah, and that's why I guess it's kind of my pastor's recommendation, you know, without recommending, because they really don't like to recommend that. But it was something like, you know, it's probably time to hit the eject button.
Right. Yeah, I am so in a hard one, because, yeah, you're right. But at the same time, there are worse things than the legacy of divorce, and in the long run, you want to be looking at what does he need to heal.
Yeah.
And he needs help.
I know.
Rick, can I interrupt just for a second?
Absolutely.
Yeah, her story is my story. Just swap the genders. Can I get the spelling of that David Brewer so I can look up the book?
Yes. Oh, it's David Einstone. I think it's Einstone hyphen or dash Brewer, Brewer.
Thank you.
And what I appreciate about David's work is he does a really good job of hermeneutics. And hermeneutics, which means he does a really good job of culturally looking at what was happening with the divorce laws in Greece and Rome, in Judea, and then begins to talk about the context of Jesus' words and Paul's words as you look in the context of what's happening culturally. And for instance, one of the things he talks about is there was a rabbi, Hillel, who had come up with a concept that was called the any-cause divorce, which is what we call no-fault divorce. And actually, no-fault divorce had become very acceptable in Judea at that point. And so one of the problems that Jesus was addressing, because they actually asked him that question, is it okay for a man to give his wife a divorce for any and every reason? And that was an any-cause divorce. And so part of what Jesus is speaking to specifically is that issue. And then he covers other issues as he goes through. He does a really masterful job, I think, of looking at all the scriptures on divorce. So I just appreciated what he had to say.
He's got a website I just found. It's divorce-remarriage.com.
Good. I've never looked at his website, so I will take a gander at it. I suspect it may have some good things on it too.
The problem is there's so much out there that it's almost overwhelming. The help, you know.
Oh yeah.
And you want to just try to stick to one venue, you know, because some of it's even contradictory. And then you really start spinning.
Yeah.
And that's why I was really hopeful and inquisitive and inquiring about, you know, the attendance at EMS, because it goes along with the harboring hope and the materials already available without, you know, getting into all ban and all the other stuff. There's just so much.
Right. And I'm thinking, you know, I don't know how Carolyn feels about it, if it was something that was good for her husband or not. Carolyn, are you still here?
I think she got off.
She may have. Oh, she just unmuted.
I'm still here.
Hey, Carolyn. Do you think it was, in terms of maybe, how did you see it impacting your husband when you were at EMS, Carolyn?
I felt like it was very positive that he absolutely got the whole part of how badly he had hurt, and that it certainly wasn't the end of the problem by any means, but it was a huge jump forward.
Yeah, see, I kind of have no jump at all. I don't even have a baby step because I don't even have disclosure. It's kind of like, well, you don't have a right to know. What are you talking about?
No, it'll get him off. And I also feel that we've been getting from the EMS stuff, it's been a very good way for us to communicate with each other without it having on me to get things. It's their work, we got to do it. So it's very good.
So it's, and he's still doing the aftercare calls?
He's on them, but we're not, we're not talking very much, or he isn't. That part of that is not really his fault. The calls are sort of going in the direction of a fair partner, just things that are not really applicable to John and I.
Okay, well, I'll get on that call and see if I can help with that.
Oh, they're fine. They're great, and it's good to communicate. Everybody, I'm really not complaining about it at all. It's just it's very good to still be connected.
Bye.
Good.
Rick, back to my question. What do you think about the separation? I mean, the problem with narcissism is you have to be careful the way you can't. You can't just act normally or react normally because of the behavioral issues, but at some point, I don't know, it's like a matter of survival of mine, and it's like I'm always having to figure out where he's at when
right.
He doesn't feel my pain at all or the pain of my children, and I just want it to move forward instead of being in this pretend normal where what he's done his whole life is, well, we'll just get out of this one and we'll get back to where we were, and then I'm going to have another one. That's what's going to happen.
Right.
And part of the 22 years, I just wasn't aware because I don't have addictions to alcohol or et cetera. So you don't understand, although my family did, both my parents and one of my brothers, and so I was familiar with alcohol and drug problems, but this is just another drug of choice. And then you have the ability for them just to go out and charm everybody. And so I don't want to make a mistake, but I don't want to send myself off into a nervous breakdown because for 22 years I've been playing pretend normal.
Well,
obviously I'm a very strong individual, but, so what?
Right. Well, Cheryl, my thing would be try the first thing I said just one more time, but if I am really, would appreciate it, and if he says no, I would go to the separation. And because a lot of times it's a wild card. If you break, if a rock hits your windshield, that crack is going to go somewhere. You don't know where it's going to go, but it's going to go somewhere. Well, it's the same way when you do that sort of intervention. Something's going to happen, and you just need to be willing to be good with whatever happens. But
exactly. That's what I told my friend and my pastor. It's not a bluff. Whatever you choose, you have to live with it. So.
Right. But in my opinion, when someone's kind of got that they're not in recovery thing, you still need to do that. And,
do what?
And then
what do you mean?
If he says, I'm sorry, what?
What do you mean, do that, when you say that? What do you
mean? Like a separation or something.
Oh, okay.
You need to draw a line in the sand.
Right. Well, I kind of drew a line in the sand with the EMS when I first brought it up in May, the end of May, when I found out he was still involved. And I said, look, if you'll go to EMS, you know, that's what I need for me. If you'll do that, then, you know, and you come back and you still want to be in this relationship, well, then we'll separate. In fact, he even repeated it to his prayer partner from his men's group. Of course, he didn't tell, the prayer partner didn't tell him, he told me, but, you know, he said, Cheryl said, you know, if I go do this and then I still want out, well, then, you know, we'll separate. So I think he's avoiding going because he won't have to make a decision.
Yeah, maybe. If there's a way that I can help, we're going to need to close the call down, but if there's a way I can help, if he'd like to even talk to me, I'll talk to him. Make that offer to him also, okay?
Yeah, he'll tell me I'm counseled out. But, I mean, I will, but it's just real obstinate behavior right now, and just let's pretend it's not happening.
Well, later
he'll...
Well, I was going to say, you can tell him, no, you're not counseled out, you're kicked out.
Yeah, I understand. But it's just a real difficult position because it's starting to affect my job and everything. It's because you cannot straddle this fence forever. I mean, you're 100 days out. And all the other times the situation itself lent it to have to terminate. And this one, I guess, is legitimate in his brain or something, you know, has no legal consequences of any sort, no ramifications, so.
Right.
But you know, it's not good, especially, you know, your kids know that, you know, he's not walking with Christ. He knows, he even told his prayer partner he wasn't walking with Christ, and you just want to knock him in the head with a 2x4. My son says he really needs a multi-story building, not a 2x4.
Right. Well, guys, I do need to close the call down because I've got a 1 o'clock. But
okay.
One thing, we're going to be sending out a survey next week, with the newsletter next week on questions you might have about sexual abuse. And so y'all be looking for that because I hope somebody writes in some questions because we're trying to figure out, develop some materials for people dealing with sexual abuse. So,
Well, I hope to get to meet you, Rick, and I appreciate
I hope to meet you, too. And, guys, thank you for joining the call. We'll be on next Thursday, okay?
Thanks, Rick.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye, guys.
Bye-bye. Thanks,